Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. If you are listening to this, I assume you are attempting to leverage your relationship with us to gain something very specifically beneficial. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
We may not be made men, but we are all wise guys. I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Also, not with us today is Big Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And I would have gotten away with it too if it hadn't been for you spelling kids with a Z. Also with us today is a very special returning guest and our first guest of the season, not named Craig Bartlett, kicking off our season 4 guest slate in style. Please welcome back to the show, Nikki Horowitz. Nikki, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. It's good to be here again. It's nice to see all of you listeners again, and you can find me on Instagram at HorrorWizard, HorrorWizard.
And we do see all of our listeners, isn't that right? Every time that you listen to an episode at home, your laptop camera broadcasts to us, so we get to see that you're delighted by our podcast, and we just really appreciate it.
Yeah. Bits are good. Today we're here to talk about episode 64 of Hey Arnold. And for those of you keeping track at home, that is season 4, episode 4, going by production code order. And we're going to start today with episode A, little bit of change of pace. And that episode is called Big Gino, original air date, March 15th, 1999. The Wikipedia sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After Sid works off a debt with loan shark Big Gino, the two become friends, but when Sid is told to give Arnold a swirly, he has to choose between the two. And as we always do, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible, Christine Kolosov, for one, who directed this episode, and Joseph Purdy, who got the writing credit for this episode. Let's get some takes aflowing here. Emily, we'll start with you. What did you think about Big Gino?
Yeah, man. Thanks for asking, Cody. This is such a great side character, Big Gino, the man, the myth, the legend. I wrote down, too, the first thing in my notes is Sid's mafia is after him. So I think that's a pretty good summary of this particular episode. I think this episode's hilarious, and it also deals with some good kid lessons, as per usual. A lot of good stuff in here about just like conforming to a group, conforming even to, I don't know, a mafia of Big Gino's type or more of like a gang at school, the bad guys. But yeah, troublemakers, really. And I think this episode is a great one for Sid to kind of shine too. This is like, I don't know, it's written in such a way that really makes sense for his personality and his character. But I mostly just think it's super funny, too, so I wrote down some of the funny lines in it. I love that it opens with, "Hey, Arnold, ever seen your friend sit around?" Like, what? Like, of course you've seen your friend Sid, but it's such a good kid style of talking, and it opens this episode, and that one really made me laugh. Also, we immediately see Sid hiding in the bushes with the plastic glasses, fake nose, and the mustache with the square eyebrows on top. Everyone had one of those back in the day, I'm sure. Those are great and so classic. So nice to see that too. The whole scheme of the candy on credit and pocketing half the money, really funny stuff for kids. I mean, they're dealing with a lot of adult themes with the whole mafia and loan shark thing here, but yeah, like the lessons, and, you know, no one is quite able to dodge swirlies by the end. Big Gino says, Arnold, I like the way you speak. Very nice. Very good use of the words you use. And just a lot of great accents and funny lines. I really like the mafia hangout spot. They're like in this grungy basement with a bunch of Yahoo boxes behind them in the corner. There's like Dino Spumoni's, of course, playing softly in the background. They have a pool table. They're just chilling down there. And the setting for it is so funny and so good. But yeah, Sid at the end has the aha moment of realizing Arnold's actually his true friend, not this troublemaker Gino. And it all comes full circle and it's great. But I just think it's really funny and deals with some nice issues of like conformity, which is especially a thing when you're a little school kid. So, but yeah, I want to hear what y'all think.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah, nice episode, as we see from time to time from the show. Adult themes or homages packed into to kid-sized packages. You love to see it and talk about it. Right, Harry? What'd you think about this episode?
Hey, thanks. First of all, I got to shout out Nikki because while we were watching the episode, in the our little chat, they said that Sid was the Christopher Moltisanti of the PS-118 Mafia, and I literally did a spit take. I was like sitting alone at home, and when I read that, I spit out what I was drinking. So shout outs, Nikki. Extremely good joke. Extremely like appropriate that like Sid, the sort of little anxiety-ridden doofus who sort of like thinks first and acts later, and he's so emotionally driven, is totally the Christopher of the group. And speaking of references, right, like it's super funny that we just talked to Craig, and a big part of that conversation was he talked about how they were all just such movie nerds, right? That really, really shows up in this episode. I remember my dad, the first time I saw this, he thought that the horse head moment was so funny and so clever that he was really cracking up. And I was like, you know, 9 years old. So I was like, what is so funny? I hadn't seen The Godfather. And so I remember like the first impression I ever had of The Godfather was my dad like walking me through why the Hey Arnold joke was funny, which is really great. It's also like, It like starts as The Godfather and it becomes Goodfellas to the point where like one of the jokes I made was like, I wonder if Jim Lang is going to like do a Layla moment in this where it's like, bum, 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 you know, that during that huge scene in Goodfellas. But I think that Emily, you really nailed it in the sense that this is a really good example of taking a classic story and putting it through the sort of Hey Arnold lens and having it sort of be elevated for the fact that it's about these characters. I love Arnold's role in this. I love that Big Gino like completely calls him out immediately. Like when they walk into that hilarious little hangout, he's just like, oh, I see you brought your lawyer, right? It's like Arnold's reputation precedes him at this point. Like he is going to mediate all of these sort of like conflicts. And yeah, it's just, it's really funny. Like, I think that Sid has always been such a dynamic personality on the show in the sense that he goes through such journeys in his episodes and they're also driven by like neuroses and, anxiety. He starts out so, like ultra concerned about, Big Gino with good reason. Obviously, but then he gets so cocky and so full of himself, and it's such a delight to see him in that suit. And that scene when he's trying to comb his hair back like the rest of the gangsters, and he just can't do it because his hair is just too stringy. Just a lot of, they were clearly just having a blast, right, with this episode. So like I like the message, right? I like the idea that it's telling this story about understanding who your friends really are and understanding that real friends don't make you do things that are that go against what you think is right. That's all very classic stuff. But sort of even above and beyond that, I just love that like here we are in season four and they're clearly just having the time of their lives making this show, right? Like you can tell that somebody was just like, hey, what if we did like a gangster episode and Sid was like the Goodfellas character in it. And everybody was like, yeah, that's great. Let's go, you know, and we're going to give it to Joseph Purdy and he's going to crush it. And he did. So I just loved, I love this sort of like relaxed vibe of just like sort of all-stars knowing that they're just going to hit a home run with every episode and just like being so playful with it. So yeah, that was a lot of fun, but I'm really interested in what Nikki and Cody have to say as well.
Yeah, I'm also interested in both of those things. And I guess, you know, Nikki, you especially, we brought you on. You're our designated mafia correspondent. Getting your perspective on that would be amazing. However, we understand if you can't necessarily speak to those things specifically. So if you'd also rather just like give your general thoughts about the episode, that would also be acceptable. However you want to proceed is okay with us.
Why, thank you so much for that leeway. You know, maybe a few more dates and I'll tell you some more. But for now, ooh, we'll just keep it mysterious. This episode, okay, first of all, it has kind of subtle animation. There's nothing like a big sunset scene or something that's really eye-popping, but the animation all the way through is so good. It's so cool. The use of color, the use of light and shadow. And there's like a theme of light and shadow. You have, you know, the Arnold on the side of light and Big Gino on the side of darkness, pushing and pulling Sid, our little Faust, making a deal with the Big Gino devil. But, you know, we follow something about Sid through this where, yes, he has some kind of insecurity he's trying to make up for with stuff. He really, you know, has a material dream that he's able to realize by connecting and working with these people who are violent, which in the end makes him violent. And there's something to be said there about the perpetuation of cycles of violence and the ways that when people have material access to something they want, they are better able to turn a blind eye to the negative impacts they may be having on their community and the world around them. And we see how basically greed takes over Sid's brain for a little bit. Arnold literally is like, you're doing to other people what they did to you, what you were so scared about that you were literally in Groucho glasses at the start of this. You know, now you've enacted on others, and Sid kind of doesn't give a shit for a minute. Excuse my French. Sid does not care about this. And, you know, that just kind of shows where he's at. And of course, then has this moral awakening at the end of the episode and says, you know, Arnold's my true friend. This material stuff didn't really matter to me. And that does send the positive message that, you know, ultimately, the people you love are what matter in this world way more than material success or goods. You know, it's a process and a journey for Sid to be able to see through his own ego enough to put down his greed and say, oh, I really need to show up for this friendship right now. There's that moment at the end where he really has to make that decision. And he articulates it, I'm choosing between Big Gino and Arnold. And of course I'm choosing Arnold. So in his heart of hearts, he's a good person. He makes the good choice. And I think that also goes to show how much when, you know, greed becomes involved or access to material things you want, even good people can easily go astray. And there is room for redemption with that as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I guess that my thoughts ultimately end up there where they kind of start is sort of where Emily started at, in that this is a very funny episode. And it is, as we've seen on this show before, like it's a very detailed and careful and kind of getting to what you were talking about, Harry, like a very, like you can tell the people making the show, you know, what their sensibilities are, that they're ultimately just having a really good time and that they care a lot about getting the spoof right or the homage right. And seeing tropes from the, you know, this specific type of story, this specific type of thing, you know, seeing the kid, you know, the kid versions of that is like, hey, like, you know, when the characters are getting drinks, they're just, you know, they're drinking Yahoos, you know, they're drinking soda. You know, when they're talking about doing odd jobs, they're talking about sweeping the clubhouse or like driving a motorbike thing with a cute little sidecar on it. You know, getting the inside scoop about somebody is just like, oh, they love their mommy. And they're not smoking cigarettes. They're sucking on lollipops, you know, like all these little bitty things. And the morality of it, or you know, like what we're supposed to take away from this story is what season four has told us in, I feel like a lot of their episodes, or a lot of the episodes up to this point, this sort of message that can be boiled down to like very crudely, you need to do the right thing. Like it's not so much about just like, hey, having a family is nuanced and difficult, and like it's okay to have feelings about certain things and like the acceptance of others. I feel like a lot of the messages we've gotten so far, like Sid specifically, you know, for a couple weeks in a row, Sid, you need to do the right thing. And Arnold has the world sort of happening to him a lot, which is also, I mean, the world always sort of happens to him on the show because it's his show, but just like, you know, he is a bystander for a lot of these things. He's sort of a pawn, like a very explicit physical pawn in another character. Again, Sid, most recently, learning a particular lesson, which is, you know, which is good fun. And it is, to, you know, to Nikki's point, you know, we talked about the animation a little bit this season. And yeah, I guess I have nothing substantial to say about it other than we did sort of collectively agree that there were some like interesting, I hate using the word interesting, some like animated components that we didn't really notice on the show up to this point. And like, to however much we should lend that to, you know, the new ways in which Craig and friends were animating the show. I don't know, like that's another drop in that bucket, but it is worth noting that this has such a distinct look to it. This episode does compared to a lot of the episodes that we've talked about up to this point. But yeah, I don't know. That's kind of where I landed with this episode. A lot of fun, very like worthy and memorable episode for my take.
It was really nice of you to frame it so diplomatically, Cody. I think that I was being curmudgeonly about the new digital animation style because I apparently hate change. But this episode was like a really good showcase for it, I think. Like Nikki was absolutely right when they pointed out like the ways that light and shadow play a legitimate like role in establishing this story. I love to watch and sort of chart Sid's entrance and exit from Shadows in particular. Hang on, side note. Am I recording? I'm not seeing my waveform.
I'm seeing it. Are y'all seeing it?
Oh, are you seeing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So maybe it's just I don't know what happened. There was like a it says I passed the test, but it's giving me no waveform, so I just want to make sure I'll write down the time that was from.
Yeah, like that's a metaphor for life. Yeah, no worries. I got the timestamp. If you want to give yourself just like a clean lead back in as best
sure.
as you can.
That just gets to the other thing I wanted to talk about, right? Which is I really like what both you, Cody, and Nikki said about the characterization of Sid. I think we're coming to see his role very clearly in this show. And it's kind of an interesting one, right? Because he is a character sort of like Harold who is sympathetic, but also explicitly needs to be sort of guided toward the right thing more than a lot of these characters do. Although, in fairness, Gerald does too, right? More or less in the next episode. But, this episode isn't Goodfellas. I don't expect it to have that sort of like trenchant socioeconomic message that movie does. But I do really like what you brought up, Nikki, about the fact that, one of the big reasons why Sid has the ego that he does and why he's primed to be affected in the way he is by Big Gino is because he's one of the poorest characters on the show, right? Like, we get to see his room at the beginning of this episode, and there was an episode about Sid's room earlier and how that made him embarrassed to let Lorenzo into it. And so that sort of, like, insecurity is a sort of direct path toward being appealed to by Big Gino to the extent that he is, right? Because he gets to feel like a big man, or like a, you know, a powerful person. And so I really like that this episode, well, sort of like very clearly and maybe even a little bit too clearly in my opinion, drawing the lines about right and wrong, just for my personal taste, it does still find room using the characters that it's already established for nuance and sympathy. And I really appreciate that. And it really makes the last scene in particular feel really earned, especially like that Sid is able to bounce back from getting a swirly as well as he is, right? Because like that is a humiliating experience that would be particularly bad for somebody like Sid, who already sort of has his own insecurities about the way he looks and the way that he comparts himself. It's a really good example of like Hey Arnold's like little attention to characterization really elevating a message beyond what it would otherwise be. And I really liked that about this.
Yeah, I did as well. And I think that's, I mean, it's a fair point to bring up that because this episode is so, it's so focused, and that's ultimately a good thing. It doesn't leave a lot of room to make this episode sort of a, like a tutoring Torvald episode where like we are telling the story of this kid and also like, you know, leaving room on the periphery to, you know, get some insight into like those socioeconomic conversations. It does stay pretty committed to the homage, which again is good. But I mean, it also on the other side of it, it does, you know, in its own way, it reminds me of the, forgetting what it's called, the episode where the older kids, you know, chase the younger kids as they try and leave school and put them in garbage cans. And it's like the climactic, you know, the worst thing in the world is not being put in garbage. The worst thing is like the fear of it, just as the worst thing here is not getting a swirly. The worst thing is betraying your friend, and the swirly itself is sort of anticlimactic. And the show's like showcasing of that, and just like, yeah, whatever, it's a swirly, like he's fine, he'll live, it's okay, you know, he and Arnold are still buds, that's what's most important. And so, yeah, I'm glad that there was room for something along those lines instead of committing, you know, 100% to the homage and not necessarily anything else. I was thinking about the Chicken Fingers episode of Community a lot while watching this.
Oh, that's, my God, yeah.
That's the elephant in the room. I just wanted to get that out of there.
They literally do the Layla scene that I talked about in that episode. It's great. Yeah, that's a really good episode. It's like the famous Joseph Purdy quote, so it's appropriate that he wrote this episode. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He said that, actually. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense that he would write an episode like this.
That's true. I don't know. I guess I'm pretty well tapped. I think others should bring up thoughts or threads that we didn't talk about. Let's use that time now. And I'm going to stop talking because I'm just drooling over the thought of chicken fingers. So somebody else should say something.
Yeah, there were a couple of things I wanted to touch on before we move on. This episode, yeah, like there wasn't a lot of room for nuanced discussion about deep plot elements. It was kind of just this like story about Sid falling into a bad crowd and then getting back out and at the heart of it. But I did notice that the episode's original air date was just a couple months after The Sopranos first aired. Sopranos, sorry, I know some people are sticklers about it, but I'm from Minnesota. I just kind of wonder how fast they can turn around a Hey Arnold episode and how much influence that had on the visual design, like that the mob headquarters is centered around a pool table, which is iconically from Sopranos. I also wanted to call out the sound leading up to the swirly scene. It was so good. I honestly think this episode is totally worth watching, even just for the final swirly scene's sound effects. It's a feast for the senses. Absolutely gorgeous.
Well, and also like Jim Lang goes off in this episode, as he always does, but like there's this amazing montage, which, by the way, I didn't totally catch the Sopranos reference, but like they also go into a pizzeria that is like basically named the butcher shop from the Sopranos, so like you're totally right. They should have had a scene where Sid goes and visits like a psychiatrist. That would have been really good. There's this great montage moment where Jim Lang like has the opportunity to play this great sort of like mafioso big band jazz music over it. And it's another great example of just like, oh, I get it. Like Jim Lang was so excited to receive this assignment, right? He was like, oh, we're doing like a mob episode? Hell yeah. Like I'm going to really go for it. And you can just tell that like, everybody was having so much fun with this one, and it really shows up in the joy of the episode.
For sure. So much joy to be found in young Italian mobster kids. Any other shout outs or threads we wanted to tie off before we bow out of this one?
I got quite a few shout outs on this one. So I will get to it. Shout out to the Abdicator poster in the background of the Mafia hangout spot. Shout out to the Tootsie Pops, which make, Cody, you mentioned, make an appearance as like stand-in for cigarettes. Shout out to Torvald for not responding to Gino's mob threats. And shout out to Nikki for mentioning the light and shadow and explaining how all of that worked. I appreciated more of that with you pointing it out. Yeah, this is a great episode. Shout outs all around.
We should pause though. We're about to make another podcast an offer they can't refuse. Because they're stepping on our turf or something. Just
you're
kidding.
Nailing this. We
would never. No. We're not like that. What's the opposite of what I just said? We're gonna pause and take gentle naps because we're gentle people and would not harm any other person or podcast. So do please stick around, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Up next, we have episode 64B, which is called Jamie O in Love. Original air date, March 15th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Gerald's older brother, Jamie O, has a sudden burst of kindness when he finds a girlfriend, but Arnold and Gerald soon find out that the girl is just using Jamie O. Gerald is conflicted between telling his brother the truth, risking Jamie O going back to his mean nature, or keeping it a secret so that he can take advantage of his brother's kindness. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Christine Kolosov directed this episode as well, so double shout outs. And then the writers for this one, Danica Ivankovich, Michelle Lamoureux, and Steve Vixton. So more shout outs all around. Harry, let's kick it to you first this time. What did you think about Jamie O being in love?
Thanks, Cody. Yeah, I think that this is a really good episode. It's a really season four episode in the sense that, like, everybody is so established, right? We already know who Jamie O is. And so there is like a little reintroduction to his character, but it takes the form of this funny montage at the beginning of the episode where he's just sort of picking on Gerald and Arnold. It occurred to me while watching this that Hey Arnold is like very much a show about siblings in a way that I like a lot, right? Like both Helga and Gerald, like a big part of their home life is dealing with their siblings and what that means for them. And I just like, I think that that's a really smart focal point for a show about kids, because it's a problem, or not a problem, but like a challenge that so many kids will actually deal with, right? Like they will spend time with their siblings before they spend time really with anybody else, especially anybody else their own age or near their own age. And they're such complex relationships. And I really like exploring that, because it's a relationship that kids can have like a really intimate and personal relationship with that makes a lot of sense, right? And I also really like the idea of a much older sibling here, which again is just like Olga and Helga, which is interesting. But yeah, I think this is really fun. I love to see Arnold in this role where he is also aggrieved of Jamie O, because it makes his sort of like moral upstandingness feel a little bit less preachy and a little bit more earned. Like, I like that he also benefits from Jamie O suddenly becoming nice. And I like that he actually is the one who tries to not really talk Gerald out of it, but be like, okay, Gerald, I don't understand. I thought you said that we were leaving this alone. That really like helps me feel like Arnold is more of a character unto himself, right? And that works really well, especially in an episode like this where he does have kind of a functionally secondary role, right? I also really like that this is not the first time that the subject of manipulation has come up in Hey Arnold, right? Like it happens a lot, particularly like the really egregious form of manipulation that is sort of, especially for kids, like being duplicitous with how you really feel, like trying to make them feel differently than how you really feel about them just to get something out of them. Similarly to the sibling relationship and sort of connected to that, I feel like that's something that would really resonate with a lot of kids, maybe that had like sort of tumultuous relationships with, you know, their friends or other family members. And it, I mean, I guess I don't need to restrict it to kids. It resonates with everybody, right? Like I think it's cool that there is like an objective villain in this episode, and which doesn't happen a lot in Hey Arnold, really. And the reason for her villainy is a lot like the sixth grade girls, right? Where it's about that manipulation. So it's really interesting to see what this show takes a hard stance on and why. And for especially for a show that is so much about being true to yourself and helping kids understand that it's okay to do that, I think it makes a lot of sense that we continually return to this well that sort of like emotional manipulation is so wrong, right? So yeah, I think that like it's a really strong episode. Jamie O's voice actor is Phil LaMarr. He's the best. Gerald's voice actor is like really, really good in this episode too. He has some really great monologues and you can really hear the way that his voice has developed through the seasons and how he's really come into his own as a performer. And it's a really fun episode, I think. I really love the weird 50s vibes that it has with the varsity jacket and going to the diner and all of that stuff. I really like that. Even when Hey Arnold isn't a genre show, it's playing with a bunch of different genres and motifs all the time. That's just another great sort of way that they elevate all of this. So yeah, I think that like this is a really strong season four episode, right? Like even from the ones we've seen, I think that this is a really good one for establishing like, okay, we're back, you know. What did you all think?
Yeah, I for one think that this definitely is a show that's ultimately about siblings. And this episode is kind of like if this series were Wes Anderson's filmography, this episode would be like the Darjeeling Limited of you know the filmography. So that's I just really wanted to say that for whatever reason. And now I will pivot to Emily. Emily, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, I really like this episode. I don't think we've seen much of Jamie O, though Harry is maybe proving me wrong. I'm not sure what you're referencing, so I was trying to think back to when else he's been in the series.
I don't know that he's ever had an episode devoted to him like this, but we've definitely seen him as part of Gerald's family. And we've seen this character trait of his where he messes with Gerald before.
Right. Okay, so this is like his big episode introduction. And yeah, I really like the pacing of this episode and a lot of things about it. I also like the food that like stood out to me a lot was just how amazing all of the cartoon food is. We have a really delicious looking cherry pie. We've got Holly's chocolates and tasty treats with the chocolate treat window. And Jamie O's popping chocolates and skipping down the street. We see some nice cakes and ice cream bars and a sundae and burgers and fries and lemonade and all sorts of stuff at that diner, that classic 60s diner you're pointing out, Harry. But yeah, I also am just thinking about, now that you had mentioned, you're making me think about the sixth grade girls episode and Phoebe Skips with Connie and Maria. So I think I'm maybe struggling a little bit now with this episode because I would like some more gender equality, maybe a gender flip at some point. Maybe we'll get that with the guy being more of the manipulator or something and not the girl playing the guy. I don't know, something like that.
Oh, wow, that's a really good point. I did not think about that. Yeah, wow, yeesh.
So I'll be watching for that. But I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned sixth grade girls and I'm starting to think of Connie and Maria. But otherwise, I like the idea that we're learning about what it's like to be taken advantage of in like a romantic situation. You don't want to date someone who makes you do their laundry and iron for them and take them to pedicures and foot waxes and make them souffles, detail their car, and drive them to yoga aerobics class. That's just a lot. That's too much. You're being played so hardcore there. But I also liked Arnold having the rose-colored glasses, really calling that out and that theme in this episode. He walks into Gerald's house, and you see from his perspective that everything's rosy, and he's got the cool glasses on. He's like, man, these rose-colored glasses are cool. And we're like, okay, that's a nice direct nod to what's going on here. And yeah, good that Jamie O can take off his theoretical rose-colored lenses and come around and see his brother in a different way by the end. So it ends up being a really good sibling episode, as Harry was pointing out. And I like Gerald at the end going, ice cream for what? Which he had specifically asked for at the beginning of the episode. Like, I just want an older brother who's, you know, normal and takes me out for ice cream without a, you know, care in the world for no reason. It's like, no older brother is like that, but you get that by the end of this episode, and that's great.
It is great. Almost as great as being an older person, some might say a grown-up or an adult, and eating ice cream literally every day for absolutely no reason. I'm referring to myself. Nikki, what did you think about this episode?
Yeah, so, okay, to your point, Emily, there's so many great little details, like the food. There's a bus that goes by, and I just barely read it, but it says, "Work or play, a ride on the bus will make your day." And then there's, like, Jamie O in the kitchen, where he's just surrounded by dishes, and, like, everything is going to heck in a handbasket. So, yeah, just, like, a very intricate episode. Also, I really think that Jamie O himself is coming out as a layered onion in this whole thing, just in that we see, you know, maybe he has some kind of insecurity that's allowing him to get played like this, and that's maybe what's getting taken out on Gerald. And so there's, like, more depth that becomes present. Definitely what you said, Emily, about, like, the evil woman trope is present, where it's, like, I mean, Charisse's only motivation is, like, material gain and, like, F that guy, basically. Like, they don't really give her any rationale. We have no way of sympathizing with why she does this. And that's actually kind of uncharacteristic for the show. Like, I think you had said, Harry, that it was that this is, like, an objective villain. Or maybe it was Cody. I'm sorry. It was a few minutes ago. But just that, yeah, like, it's because of how she's portrayed at the same time, where there's just no backstory other than that she's playing Jamie O. And I think that it's an important theme, yes, that we talk about, like, how relationship power dynamics are not always even, how there is the chance of your partner not actually being a good person, and you have to be wary about that and not just, like, dive in without vetting them a little bit. But it is also presented in a way in regard to that trope that's a little bit ham-fisted, because it's just so black and white in terms of, like, Jamie O is being victimized, period. There's no wiggle room in this narrative. But overall, I do think it's a great episode. It's a great story. It's really a significant episode in terms of, you know, the way that Jamie O and Gerald bond by the end, and that the again kind of shows that there's this chance for redemption. Even when relationships are complicated or painful, there is a chance for that core love to come through. And I think that's really important. And that is something that this show tackles often. It points back to that often, that it's like, if you really just show care for people, you can mess up, you can have a terrible time, things can go wrong, and your community will be there for you. It's just that you have to also reach out and show up for them back. And to that end, this episode's really effective. You know, it does show a lot of really positive things through the lens of Jamie O's journey into heartbreak. So mixed feelings in all of it, but overall would recommend. Absolutely.
I would as well. As I was watching the episode and as we've been talking about it, I thought back, and, like, weirdly, Jamie O has, for as little screen time as he's had in the series up to this point, and I guess overall, one of my most fondly remembered clips from the show features Jamie O. It's that scene, I think we've already covered the episode, but when Arnold's having dinner at Gerald's house and Jamie O tells him to say booger while Gerald's drinking milk, and milk will come shooting out of his nose, and he says booger, and then just the animation of this these milk rockets coming out of both of Gerald's nostrils. It's just, I remembered that for years before I, like, refound the show. It's very strange that I did, but hey, that is my history. That's part of my story. And thank you, Jamie O, for that. And like, weirdly, thank you to this episode for giving a soft rebrand to Jamie O and making, like, it plays into the intense sibling dynamics that this episode digs into. But it makes him a jerk. He's either a big jerk or he's extremely down bad in the way that older brothers can get. I can say that because I'm an older brother, and hey, I've been down bad before. That's just how it works. And like, not to all this talk, you know, we're talking about the sort of the iffy characterizing of like character motivations, and like the Charisse is, like, similarly one dimensional in her, you know, reason for being with Jamie-O, just as Jamie-O has sort of, you know, he's either a jerk to his brother and to Arnold, or he's doing extremely nice things for like interior reasons that we don't even necessarily get. And the thing that I always bring up on the show is like, one of the things that I feel like I bring up a lot is this whole, like, from a kid's perspective, from somebody who is as old as Arnold watching this show and also like seeing the world, like older brothers might not make sense. The things that they do don't necessarily have like logical reasons to them, especially as, you know, like people who are Arnold and Gerald's age are not interested in romantic relationships in the same way that Jamie-O is, and they may not understand why he might do certain things or why Charisse might do certain things. That is, I mean, that doesn't necessarily square all the circles, right? It's kind of a stretch to like say that. It was like, well, you know, that rationalizes everything, and that makes, you know, the you know, shallow characterizing of Charisse, like, that makes it okay, because like we're looking at this like we're just dumb kids, like we can't chalk everything up to that. But I did feel some of that here, or maybe it was just because Jamie-O is voiced by like a 30 something year old man, and that helped make him feel like, you know, older siblings and older people who are older than you, like either someone's your age or they're like 50, and that's just the way it is when you're a kid. And I don't know, I was feeling a lot of that here. I like the sort of Z Files framing of, you know, I need to, I think Nikki, it was you or somebody, and now I'm forgetting who brought up the onion stuff, but just like peeling back the layers of older siblings and, you know, as if they are alien beings. I almost would have liked if they had leaned into that framing a bit more, but yeah, we got a little taste of it. I think as like a sibling, as an episode devoted to like sibling relationships, I like this quite a bit, more so than if I were just watching this as a normal episode, I think. But you know, no bonus points because no milk shot out of anybody's nose, I guess, is ultimately what I'm saying.
Man, first of all, what a good point about the Z Files. I didn't really pick up on that connection, but like, there is something very forensic about this episode, right? They're literally tailing Jamie-O to sort of like get a sense of a day in the life. And he is this sort of like unknowable being to them. It's like, why is he so mean? Why is he being so nice now? It's like, from a fourth grade, a kid's perspective, you don't know why your older brother is doing any of that stuff, right? So I really like that framing. I agree that they should have gone further with it. Also, I'm really glad that Emily brought up the misogyny angle to this episode, because like you said, Nikki, it is uncharacteristic of the show in one sense, but it's also a pattern, right? Like, particularly, I really hated that like Charisse had a friend who was also a woman, and they like talked about this like they were serial killers, where they were like, oh yeah, I got another guy to do all this stuff for me. It's like in Hey Arnold, there is like this conspiracy theory that is true, that like, oh yeah, there are groups of women that just go out there and prey on dopey men like this, right? And it's just like, what? Especially like to lean on a trope like that in a show for kids who are already going to have combative and not great relationships with other genders as they sort of grow up. It's like, I feel like that's the sort of thing you really have to be particularly careful with. So you're right. I didn't pick up on that, but maybe I just was too quick to overlook it as like just a unnecessary evil of the episode itself. But particularly, this is spoilers, but like, I know that this is not the last time we have a manipulative woman on the show. Season 4's finale, I believe, like, prominently features a woman who is manipulating Arnold. And so there is definitely something going on there, huh? Which is super not great. I'm sympathetic to what you were saying, Cody, about like, I do really like this idea that like Charisse is almost not a character because she can't be a character on this show because she is being perceived by fourth graders. And so she's like the Wicked Witch of the West to them. I just wish that they would have made that more explicit, right? Or like maybe if they had like done something with the animation, right? Or like made Jamie-O sort of like monstrous looking, though that would have gotten into its own sort of can of worms sometimes, and then done the same thing just sort of like reflect that, you know. But Hey Arnold's not really that kind of show. It would have to be in like a dream sequence or something. But yeah, a rare definite mishandling, I think. Not since the flood have we had such such a problematic mishandling of certain sensitive subject matter, I think. But very good to talk about that, I guess. I still think that this episode works for me, maybe better than it should, mostly just because I really love Arnold and Gerald. And it feels like it's been a while since we've had a Arnold and Gerald Adventures episode. Do you know what I mean? And like the Brian De Palma episode with Mr. Green was like another example of just like, for some reason, like Arnold and Gerald just be tailing people like with some regularity, and it's seen as sort of like cute. And I just love that. I love how in cartoons people are always tailing other people and it's never a big deal, when it's like, you know, like in real life you shouldn't tail people, that's like really, really rough and bad. But there's something different about it because it's like, it's so cute when it's these little kids and it, you know. So I just really appreciate that aspect of this episode. I think that Hey Arnold is a show that does best friends super well. And even in the episodes where that's not the point of the story, it really comes across. And I love that.
Yeah, and that sort of thing does come across in like that Mr. Green episode, which I was also thinking about a lot while watching. And just not to, I guess that is kind of like an armchair director thing, but just like, you can imagine how like cool of an episode this would be if it were like a journey of, you know, Gerald as a younger brother and Arnold as somebody who doesn't really have, you know, like, you know, siblings, right? Like he lives in a household with a bunch of like different like parent figures. And so like them, you know, taking a De Palma-esque adventure through the dirty underbelly of the city and Jamie O's life. And just like, you know, learning about what makes older siblings, older brothers tick, and like finding out what, you know, someone, you know, a potential romantic partner like Charisse, like what makes that, and like get maybe seeing some of those things on the surface. Well, like, oh, well, if Charisse is like this, and that makes Jamie O act like this, and that means that Charisse is a bad person. But actually, like, Charisse has a lot of other things going on, and like, you know, she's, you know, being older is complicated, and like this stuff isn't easy. That, I mean, that feels kind of De Palma-y, right? Where just like, oh, it's like we're stepping too deep into the pool. We need to like pull ourselves out. These are not our problems that we have to contend with yet. Instead, it becomes another episode where it's like, we need to do the right thing, which again is not a bad moral message by any means, but like you can, I don't know, imagine some of the other ways this episode could have gone, and maybe, you know, not painted such a crude picture of these characters, right? Like we didn't necessarily need to have to draw any conclusions about Charisse or about Jamie or about, you know, Gerald or Arnold. Like they didn't need to be sort of mishandling the rewards they were feeling from their newfound relationship with Jamie O. Just, I don't know, taking an episode to learn about these things could have been, it would have felt very like Sesame Street, but I don't know. Sesame Street's also a good show, so, you know, something to consider. Shout out to Sesame Street for being a good show. Come on the pod.
I mean, you open Pandora's box a little bit with the armchair directing, but like, you're so right, right? Like, imagine an episode where, like Arnold and Gerald never intervene. Right, where they're always on the outside and their purpose is purely scientific, where it's like, we're going to find out what makes Jamie O tick. Why is he so angry all the time? And then maybe they think about intervening when they see Charisse, but they don't. And then Jamie O resolves it himself, right? Like, I'm trying to deproblematize the episode now, but like, what if Charisse had a boyfriend who was putting her up to this with Jamie O, right? And like, it turns out Jamie O has a bully of his own, and like even when you're an older kid, you still have problems. And then like they watch it unfold, and then they go back home and Jamie O's mad at them again. But like they have this newfound empathy to understand why he's so pissed off. Right. I just think that it's weird to frame it this way. And to sort of like, especially because of, again, the sort of adult framing of Jamie O and his problems, where it's like, well, like part of being an older kid is you're going to have to deal with girls, you know. And it's like, huh, I don't know, man, that seems fraught to me. But yeah, you know, and we can't talk about what we wish the episodes would be, because we, much as I would like to, I was not part of the Harold's writer's room, but this is just to say, season 7, Craig, hit me up, hit us up. We're gonna write season 7 of Harem. That's what I'm saying. We're not gonna do that. I'm lathing heaven. Go ahead, Emily.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the pacing again of this episode. So I had said at the beginning I liked the pacing, and now I'm thinking about how it might cause a lot of the issues we're talking about. Especially, so at the beginning we have, man, like, my brother is so mean. Why is he always so mean? And then it's the quickest cut ever. He's never going to change. And they turn around and Jamie-O's in the kitchen and he's in the best mood they've ever seen him in. He's a completely different person. So that just like happens super fast, but so does all of the other drama that plays out. And I just wonder if, I don't know, maybe they're just trying to do so much and it just kept going really quickly, which is part of the fun of it. Cause it's like this mini movie or something, with so many different settings in the episode. But like the kids overhearing Charisse and her friend is like, they just hear, you know, what they hear for a second. They don't hear their whole conversation. They relay that to Jamie-O. Jamie-O kind of goes, okay, but he's still going over there and like isn't completely on board with what the kids had told him about Charisse. And then he overhears what he overhears for also a second. And it's kind of like this quick pacing just to get to the point. So I'm just thinking about that. But yeah, the music plays a crucial role in this one. The jazz, like the dissonant jazz that's going on when Jamie-O's having that meltdown. There's like this crazy guitar noise that's happening. He's like on the floor of the kitchen with the souffle and everything, just falling apart. But yeah, I'm thinking about the pacing a lot and wondering about maybe that causes some of the problems.
Then you make another good point, which is just that this episode is called Jamie-O in Love, right? Like, it's supposed to be about how weird it is to fall in love, and these kids are supposed to be sort of on the outside looking in and thinking about that and maybe even being like, wow, that'll never be me, right? Or like, I can't understand this. So like, why did Charisse have to be this like supervillain anyway, right? Couldn't he have had like a completely normal relationship that just fell apart and that's why he got mean or got sad again at the end, right? Like, that would have been, I would have liked to have seen that arc more too, I think, just because like, I feel like the real idea of this episode is supposed to be exploring how older siblings are like beset by their own problems, like you said, Cody. And I just don't know that we need Charisse's like evilness for this. And you're right. Like, their conversation is like, it's like super villain level, right? Where she's like, oh yeah, just another guy. I'm going to milk him for all he's worth. And then I'm going to, you know, and it's like, you didn't need to put it that way. What do you think, Nikki?
Yeah. Well, so there was something I was thinking about a little bit unrelated, because I have touched on kind of my thoughts on Charisse in that regard. But you, Harry, and Cody both mentioned the age difference and like this process of falling in love. And I just wanted to make sure that we catch that, because part of everything, too, is it's like you can watch Jamie-O's arc sort of as like a chemical process. Like, his brain gets flooded with oxytocin and all of a sudden he's a total sweetheart. And like that, when you're first falling in love or when you're first having those kinds of experiences, it's like completely physiologically and psychologically overwhelming. And we see that radical overnight transformation as Jamie goes through that change. And how are the kids supposed to understand that? I love that they tail them, in the sense that I love how much that expresses their skepticism about Jamie O's situation, because they just don't get it. Like, the only other peer they have that's really experienced anything like that is Helga, and she's not telling them about it. So, yeah, I think just like modeling what it's like for a teenager to experience first love and first heartbreak is an important aspect of this, even as much as we're talking about. It was done in a sort of problematic way and in a way that does not lend compassion to one part of that relationship very well.
Agreed. And, you know, one reading of it, you know, he gets bitten by the love bug and overnight he becomes Spider-Man 2002, directed by Sam Raimi. He gets bitten by a love bug. Oh, it's a radioactive spider. Got it.
Sorry, was this just another movie reference you wanted to fit in there? Are we going for some kind of record? I feel like we're going for some kind of record at this point.
No, that would be silly. Don't you silly Billy. Did you have something, Harry?
Oh, it just rules that you unpacked it from like a physiological perspective, Nikki. That was rad. And also, like, to get back to the Z-Files, I love that they're referencing this TV show and that it's clearly influencing them, right? Like, one of the funny things about how Gerald expresses his skepticism is he keeps saying, like, oh, it's like a Z-Files episode, right? Like, Jamio's been replaced by a clone of Jamio who's smart, right? And I think that, like, there's something about, like, it's so smart to use that sort of framing to be, like, examining how the kids are processing their own life events through media. I know that that's like a tertiary point of this episode, but there's something about that really speaks to, like, realities well, right? Like, the characters feel so real that, oh yeah, they're the type of kids that watch the Z-Files, and then after they watch the Z-Files, they're, like, kind of influenced by it, right? Like, they start to see UFOs everywhere. It's like, that's there's something so, like, quintessentially childish about that I really love, and that really helps. It's another great example of, like, just grounding these characters in realities.
Agreed. They're definitely the type of kids to, like, you know, stay up late, watch 50s sci-fi, and then in the woods they find Brad Bird's The Iron Giant. You know, it's very similar to that. Any other movie references that people want to make or threads they want to bring up, shout-outs, anything like that before we close this one out?
Shout-out to the chick flick Jamio and Charisse go to called Endless Kiss. I'm sure it was great. Also, shout out to one of our listeners for pointing out in this episode in the past, we had talked about the figs, like not knowing if that was the mascot of PS-118, and it definitely is because we've seen it a few times now, and it's proudly on Jamio's varsity jacket in this episode. So shout out to Rebecca, Dream Bounded Star, for that one. Also, shout out to Mutant Space Freaks 5000. Harry, I'm sure, could speak more to that, maybe, if that's a reference to any actual game. And shout out one last time, shout out to Doofs, just the word Doofs.
It's D-O-O-F-S, Doofs. Fantastic word.
I wanted to make one specific shout out to Gladiators on Ice. I don't know what it is, but I want tickets to it. Dang. That's it.
Man, do you think that in ancient Rome, ice skating had been invented? And do you think that in the Colosseum, they ever did one of those matches? You know, because they did naval battles sometimes in the Colosseum. I wonder if they ever, like, filled up the Colosseum with water and then, like, froze it so you could literally do a Gladiators on Ice situation. That probably didn't happen. I don't think that that might have been before the metal required for ice skating existed. But that would have been cool. That's all I'm saying. You know, shout outs to Gladiators on Ice.
And shout out to any other person or podcast in the world who's probably more qualified to talk about that than us. But you know what? Now I can't stop thinking about it. And I also can't stop thinking about how much fun I had here today with y'all here. Nikki, in particular, thank you so much for joining us on the show yet again. If you could please remind us, where can people find you, and do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Hi, yeah, thank you so much for having me on again. It's always a riot in the fun way. You can find me on Instagram at HorrorWizard, HorrowiZard. I'm also on Bandcamp at HorrorWizard.bandcamp.com. I forgot how subdomains work for a second, don't worry. And that's it. Just those two places. But you know what? Come say hi to me. Send me a DM. I don't care. It'll be fun.
Nice. Yeah, it's season 4. We're opening up the floodgates of interaction online DMs, it's very scary, and I'm going to regret that immediately. But hey, in the meantime, thank you very much for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry. Thanks again, Nikki. And check out Nikki's music. It's awesome. It's really sick. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Thank you.
Seconding that. Go Figs. I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
That's right. Great episode, everyone. I'll go ahead and stop this recording. Oh, wait. I forgot my souffle.